Okay, welcome to the Netziv, the Hamikdavar, and Parshiyos Bahar B'Chukosai. I want to start with a beautiful Netziv, which builds on a concept which we saw 2 weeks ago in Parshiyos Akrei Mos Kedoshim. Of course, we know that the first part of Parshiyos Bahar describes the mitzvahs of Shemitah and Yovel. So after describing at some length those particular mitzvahs, so Perek Chofei Pasuk Yud Ches, the Pasuk says as follows: V'asisem es chukosai, you should perform my chukim, yes, mishpotai tishmeru v'asisem osam, and guard my mishpotim, and do them as well. V'shavtem al ha'aretz lavetach, and you will dwell on the land securely. Now the last part of that pasuk, I understand, you know, what it's adding to the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel. Rashi tells us, "Vishatim al aris lovet, achshav be'alvon Shemitah, Yisrael golim." As the pasuk is going to say later on, "B'chukosai," the failure to observe the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel is a major cause for golus. So here the pasuk is telling us, if you keep the mitzvahs of Shemitah and Yovel, so then Vishavtem al aris levetach, so then you'll be able to continue living on the land, you won't be subject to this penalty of goats. But if that's all the Pasuk was saying, so the Pasuk should have started off by saying, Ushmartem es ha-mitzvah hazos, right, or some equivalent thereof, Ushmartem es ha-shmita, right, Vishavtem al aris levetach. What's the very general and somewhat vague statement with which the Pasuk begins? You should do my chukim and my mishpatim. That's a very sweeping statement. It makes it sound like you should keep the Torah in general. I mean, again, nobody argues. Of course we should keep the Torah in general. But why have that focus davka at this particular point in time? So the Netziv suggests as follows. B'chol ha'psukim shel chadom l'seksiv u'shmartem es chukosai v'mishpatai. Right, there are other psukim, but in the other psukim that are similar to this, it says something along the lines of Shmartem es chukosai ves mishpotai. You should guard my chukim and mishpotim. Here, there are three verbs which are used: Va'asisem es chukosai ves mishpotai tishmeru va'asisem osam. Right? Why this abundance of verbs? So the kanshi akosu b'lashon l'chavon amuka. There's a deep intent in the choice of words over here as follows. The Kfar Be'arnu, the B'chol Makom Shiktim HaKosim Chukim U'Mishpatim, Mashmal Chukim Klolim Sha'atar Nidreshes U'Mispareshes Bohem, U'Mishpatim HaChakira HaYotzei Me'aklolim. Again, back in Akrei Mos, the Netziv wrote at length that although the signon, you know, the Nusach of, you know, Mishpatim and Chukim, according to Chazal, means rational mitzvahs as opposed to mitzvahs which we don't rationally understand, when the Torah flips it and it talks about chukim and then mishpatim, chukim means the midah shatar nidreshes for him, things like the, you know, the 13 principles of elucidation, you know, Rabbi Yishmael's 13 principles of elucidation, those are the chukim, the rules, and then the mishpatim are those halachas that are derived by from the application of the rules. Upirush shmirah v'asiyah, and the meaning of the two terms shmirah, guarding, and asiyah, doing. Shmirah humashim lomar kvash lo yishkach. Shmirah means guarding what you've already learned, so you won't forget it. In other words, chazara. V'asiyah lahosif al pi ho'iyan chadoshos. And asiyah means, you know, doing. Making means being mechadish chidushi Torah, coming up with novel insights. That's atziyah in this context. Right, that's back in Akrei Mos Kedoshim. We learned, you know, asher yaser osam ha'odom v'chai bohem means chidushi Torah. V'hinei la'asos chidushi Torah piyak lolam shenishnu kvar ein tzarech iyon yisera kol kach kumo la'asos eze klal bidroshes ha'torah al pi hakabalos b'halachos shemikvar. Kimosha Hosef Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael Yud Gimel Midos U'mitchila Hoya Sheva Midos Shehevi Hil Hazak and Kedetam Nosef the Sanhej Mekama Mekomos Ve'acha Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael Nisvasvu Od Klolim V'hu Alpi Iyun Mechadosh B'chol Dor V'dor. Says that it's a fascinating idea. No, so we all talk about, the Yud Gimel Midos Shatara Nidreshes for him, right? I mean, it's incorporated into our davening, so we're used to that. We're used to that idea. Yud Gimel Midos Shatara Nidreshes for him, right? But the truth is, if you look at various sources in Chazal, the number 13 isn't the only number of Midos that are mentioned. He mentions a Tosefta that talks about 7 Midos of Hillel HaZaken. Right, Hillel, of course, lived before Rabbi Yishmael. So Hillel had 7 Midos of interpretation. Right, Rabbi Yishmael 13 Midos of interpretation. And we find that there's a mention of 32 Midos of interpretation. Right, you go through different Makaris and Chazal, there are different numbers of principles that are used. And the truth is, even if one looks at the Yidgum Mimil Shatar Nidreshes poem, we don't have every single midah that we know that's mentioned there in the Yud Gimel Midos. You know, we don't have Hekesh Lamashal, you know, that's mentioned over there. There are things that are not in the Yud Gimel Midos. How can it be that there are different numbers of principles? I mean, different halachas I understand, but different numbers of principles? Shouldn't there be a finite number of principles? So comes the Nesiv and he develops the following idea. He says, no, the principles also expand through time. Hillel Taka only had 7 Midos Shatar and Idreshes for him. So how did Rabbi Yishmael come to 13? Because over the course of time, if you really spend a lot of time learning Torah, not only can you come up with new chidushim, applying the principles, but someone who really analyzes Torah in depth can come up with new principles. Again, how do you come up with new principles? Obviously, you have to be steeped in a knowledge of Torah. You know, you can't just walk in and say, well, you know, I think that every fifth word is a key to understanding this, that, or the other thing. You can't make up the principles. But a person who's really steeped in Liman HaTorah can not only apply the principles which were already utilized, but he can discover new principles of interpretation. So in other words, Hillel had 7 principles of interpretation. Rabbi Yishmael, through his eon, through his deep understanding of Torah, was able to discover additional principles of interpretation, which, again, it's a process of discovery. They were there. It's not like Rabbi Yishmael, made up or created, new principles. He discovered, he uncovered these principles that were there, but that act of discovery can come about through a deep knowledge and a deep analysis, working on the sugyas in Torah to get a better understanding of them.
Are these principles so how's it possible to come up with new ones if there's no Masorah?
Right. So apparently, what the Netziv is saying is as follows: yeah, at their core, all of these principles start out as being halacha l'moshe misinai, but the same way that you can take halachas and derive other halachas from those halachas, you can take principles and by analyzing the principles come up with new applications of the principles themselves.
Without the
Masorah. Why? Because the Nesiv, I think, is saying is that these new principles are latent in the first principles. Right? And it's not pshat that you came along and you just, made up a totally new idea. You looked at the first principle and you were able to discern that latent within that principle is really two and two prime. It's a variant on the first principle. It's included in the first principle. It's not exactly what the first principle was saying, right? So you can come up with these new logical principles. Again, you have to be holding in a certain madrega to be able to do this, but there is such a possibility of doing that. So v'hinei b'shnei yovel sho mukhsheres v'harbos v'iyin ha-Torah yoser mi'idach shorim v'tam sh'yavur. What's the whole idea of Shemitah and particularly Yovel all about? Shemitah and Yovel are times during which the farmer can take off time from having to work the fields and he can sit and learn. Shemitah and Yovel were a nationwide year of kolam. Right? So the farmer took off time, Klal Yisrael took off time, and they sat and they learned. Now, the skula of being able to work, to learn full-time for an extended period of time like that, for a year, in the case of Yovel, 2 years straight, it's not only that you get a lot of learning under your belt, quantitatively, but qualitatively, the learning is on a deeper level.
And,
Right? You have no diners. You have no worry about anything. And
losing anything.
And you're able during those years, says the Netziv, not only just to learn new halachas, but qualitatively, you're able to create new principles, shatara nidreshes bohem. Shemitah and particularly Yovel lend themselves to that qualitative improvement in Limud HaTorah. So Emela comes to Netziv and he says, look at this pasuk, right? What is this pasuk telling us? This pasuk is telling us about the whole tachlis, the whole purpose of Yovel. If you observe the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, which again was the whole discussion up till now, the asisem es chukosai, you will not only be shomer the chukim, meaning not only will you remember the chukim which already existed, but v'asisem es chukosai, you'll have the schus to be mechadesh klolim sha'atara nidreshes for him. You'll be able to create new principles, again, in a Torah-dika fashion. Right? That's what he says, Mishumachi, he's here, kana kosa v'asisem es chukosai, v'asos klolim api omekoiyon. Right, so this place is unique. Even though every other place in Chumash where it talks about the chukim, it always uses the lashon shmira, just holding on to what's there already. Here it uses the lashon asiya. You'll be able to create new klolim shatar and nidreshes for him. And hence, that's mishpotai tishmiru va'asisem osam. It will give you the opportunity to chazer over all of the old halachas, but you'll be able to discover new halachas by virtue of not only using the old klolim, which of course always enables you to discover new halachas, but you'll even have new klolim. So if you have new klolim, additional klolim, shatar nidreshes for him, so you'll be able to discover even new halachas, even deeper chidushim that you were unable to understand before. This year of Shemitah and Yovel is a year of Asiyah. It's a year of Torah creativity. Not just Torah creativity in terms of the halachas, but Torah creativity even in terms of the concepts, even in terms of the overarching principles, which you're able to discover, you know, using this, the time that's given you during Shemitah and Yovel.
But isn't it dangerous if you can mechadesh new things, you can go off the mirror?
Yeah, of course it's dangerous. But, dangerous to walk outside your house. I mean, statistically, I think a person has a very good chance of getting hit by a car when he crosses the street, right? But, the whole yisod of learning, that's what we talked about by Achrim El Skadosh,
right.
The whole yisod of learning is to be mechadesh, right? So, again, obviously, any chiddush has to be tested against, you can't just say, Baich Svaras.
Isn't this how the Maskilim started?
No, this is Torah. This is Amito Shel Torah, that we're Mechadesh Chidusha. Right? Mechadesh Chidusha, again, doesn't mean that you make up whatever you want to say. I mean, look, take the realm of science. Right? Science is all about creativity. The Rav Zatzal, used to compare the study of Torah to the study of science in this sense. That science is about an act of creativity, of discovery in the life. So Torah is also about discovery. Right? So if a scientist came along and said, I believe that when I throw something up into the air, it doesn't come down. He's a tremendous mechadish. But he's wrong.
And then Newton came along.
Right? So we have checks and balances. I mean, you can't just be mechadish anything. The chiddush has to work. You bounce the chiddush off of chaverim. You bounce the chiddush off of rebbeim, right? But the notion of being mechadish, of being mamik, of trying to discover new things in Torah. For the Netziv, that was the very essence of what Limud HaTorah is all about. It's not
a skillish idea. You bring it to a higher level,
right? The whole idea of Limud HaTorah is to discover new things in Torah. Again, we spoke about 2 weeks ago. So what does that mean for the average guy who has a hard time, just understand what the pasuk means with Rashi? So as we said, the most basic idea of a chiddush is a chiddush to you, meaning I never understood this pasuk properly before. If I now understand this pasuk properly, that's called making a chiddush. Chiddush doesn't have to mean something that you're going to write up in a Torah journal. Chiddush means that you never quite had a clear understanding of this topic or this pasuk or this mishnah, whatever it happens to be, and now I understand it better, right? I think that's enough for the stipler. That's the ikkar idea of a chiddush, is that you should understand something better than you did before. So that's on the most basic level. But again, on the advanced level, so a person comes up with new ideas. Again, new ideas. It just means that you're discovering things that are there all the time, that have been there all along. But you know, you pulled the, you shed the light of day on these ideas. Okay, so that's a beautiful application of the basic ideas which the Netziv already introduced back in Parshas Acharimos, where again Asiya, Shmira, Chukim, Mishpatim, you know, in this pasuk now take on a whole new life and describe that the whole, you know, purpose of the Yovel and Shmita year is to enable us to, you know, not just take off time to learn, but qualitatively that we should be able to be mechadesh kiddushim during the Yovel and Shmita year. There's another beautiful Netziv a little bit later on in Parshas Behar, Perek Chof Hei, Pasuk Mem Zayin, where the Netziv lays out a theory of anti-Semitism and how the Jew is supposed to relate to the non-Jew throughout history. Anti-Semitism, actually, the Netziv has an essay on the causes of anti-Semitism, distinct from his Pirush on the Chumash. And here he lays out some of his basic ideas on the topic in the context of the Chumash itself. So Perek Chof Hei Pasuk Mem Zayin, the Pasuk says as follows: V'chi sasig yad ger v'soshav imach. When a ger toshav acquires a certain status amidst you, in other words, this ger toshav, this non-Jew who lives among the Jewish people, rises up in terms of his stature, he becomes a person of means. Umach achicha imo. And at that same time, your brother, a fellow Jew, becomes impoverished imo, with him. And as a result of the fact that this ger toshav is, you know, doing very well, and the Jew financially is doing very poorly, v'nimker leger toshav imach. So the Jew ends up having to be sold as a slave to become the property of this ger toshav. This ger toshav, who's, you know, his index, right? So you see that it happens, right? And then the poster goes on to talk about how there's an obligation on the family members of this Jew to somehow come along and redeem this Jew from being the slave of the non-Jew, of the ger toshav, right? Rashi over here comments that the words imach and imo seem difficult to understand. The ger toshav becomes rich imach, with you, and your brother, your fellow Jew, becomes poor imo, with him. Well, why do you have to put those words in all together? The ger toshav becomes well-to-do, the Jew becomes impoverished. What's imach and imo? So Zot Rashi is found. What's the first imach? Mi garam lo shiya ashir. What enabled this non-Jew to become enriched? Dibuko imach. The fact that he was imach, the fact that he was with you. The fact that this non-Jew is hanging out among Jews, you know, not only does the ruchnius, the spirituality, rub off on him, but it's good luck, you know, so to speak, to be around Jews. You know, the fact that he chooses to throw in his life. Remember, the ger toshav is a non-Jew who's accepted Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, right, and is living among Jews and feels a certain attachment to Judaism, even though he hasn't become Jewish himself, right? His connection to Judaism causes HaKadosh Baruch Hu to raise up his financial status. Conversely, umach achicho imo, right, that your brother becomes impoverished with him, mi garam lo shi imoch, says Rashi, what caused your brother, your fellow Jew, to become impoverished? Dibuko imo, the fact that this Jew is now clinging to the non-Jew. Right? The non-Jew moves into the neighborhood, so because he's hanging around Jews, which from his point of view is a step up in Ruchnius, so that, you know, that makes life go well for him.
Also, he knows how to do business well.
But the Jew, who's now hanging out in the company of this non-Jew, so he has a step down in Ruchnius. Says Rashi, Al Yidei Shalom Abi Maisov. Right? The non-Jew is the Jew is learning the ways of the non-Jew, and as a result, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish him, it seems, by taking away some of his money. So that's what's going to happen.
That's
how it ends up, that this Jew is going to be sold to a non-Jew. That's Rashi's interpretation of the pasuk, again quoting from Chazal. So the Netziv takes this Rashi and he uses it, you know, to build an entire theory of anti-Semitism and how it works. And along the way, talk about anti-Semitism, he also talks about a bunch of other very important yisodos and hashkafa, which I think are worthwhile to talk about over here. Yeah, right over here. Says the Hamid Dov as follows, Pasuk Mem Zayin. Pirish Rashi, Migaram lo shimach dibuko imach, a'achal gav shu meshubach b'shul dibuko imach, mikol makom, ein ha'shvach mo'il, el lefi erko shu ovid kolchavim, v'lo liyisro. Right? So, you know, the again, the Tziv points out the sort of the paradox over here. The non-Jew is attaching himself to Jews because the non-Jew is raising himself up spiritually. So the Jew is really attaching himself to a non-Jew. He's a good guy. He's not a Russia. Right? This is a non-Jew who's coming to become, if not part of the Jewish people, at least an associate member. You know, he's somebody who has a connection to the Jewish people. He likes the Jewish people. Right? So why would the Jew attaching himself to such a person, you know, cause the Jew to go down? So the Nesiv says, look, okay, this non-Jew has raised up his spiritual level relative to where he was, but relative to where the Jew was, is, you know, the non-Jew is still a step down. But still, you know, says the Nesiv, this requires further explanation. First of all, says the Nesiv, you should know that when a person becomes either rich or poor in this world, it's not a result, it's not a punishment because of his, you know, doing or failing to do mitzvahs ben adam l'makom. It's because the person is either doing or failing to do mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveira. Right? It's davka mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveira that control the person's wealth or lack thereof. Why does, you know, what's the nesiv source for this idea? So he says, k'di'isa b'shavas davkuf nun aleph, omid beis, called Merachim al Abrios, Merachim al Oven Hashemai. Quotes the Gemara in Shabbos that a person who has Rachmanus on others, God will have Rachmanus on that person. So apparently, God's Rachmanus on the person is dependent on your Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, not really so much on your Ben Adam L'Makom. You know, the question of whether the person is going to do financially well in this world is more a function of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro than it is a function of Ben Adam L'Makom. Of course, obviously, if the person is not scrupulous with Ben Adam L'Makom, he'll be punished in the next world. Well, okay, but that's for the next world. For right now, for this world, it's Ben Adam L'Chaveiro which is the Gorin. So why did this non-Jew become rich? Because he's hanging around with Jews. He absorbs their midos tovos, which are to be gomle chasodim. That's what makes him rich. The eich boli yisom davik asma latoshav hazeh shalchan avelus v'chadoma shunasa enu merachim al abriyas v'enu midos gomles chasodim ad shebishvil zeh nasa moch v'yatoshav asma hu rachman gomle chasodim shalchan avelus. When we say that the Jew is impoverished because he creates a connection with the non-Jew, why should that be? Especially in light of this idea that mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveiro are what determine whether the person is rich or poor in this world. Because this non-Jew, yes, this non-Jew, his ben adam l'makom, is not on the madrega of the Jew. You know, the non-Jew is still eating treif, you know, etc., etc., etc. But the non-Jew has raised himself up in terms of ben adam l'chaveiro. Right? In you know, in what sense, why does this non-Jew want to cling to the Jewish people? Not to become Jewish and keep Shabbos and kosher and the like. He clings to the Jews because he sees the Jews as being bastions of morality and ethics and the like. So if anything, this non-Jew is a very ethical person. So if the Jew clings to this non-Jew, the Jew himself will continue being an ethical person. So why should that impact negatively on his finances, says the Nitziv. You have to understand as follows. The Kamo Bechomer Aguf, Komi Sheishlo Tsura Gavo, Masher Tachtov, Hachomer Shalo Cholosh Yoser, the Kaasher Humabik Suros of Nisar Chomro Gamkein, Ad Shanasa Gurua Masher Tachtov Shachomro Bori, Alkokom upon him Gambli Tsura Gavoa, Kamo Ditsemach, Shachomer Shalat Someach, Im Humabsid Koach at Smicho Shub Surosa. You should know, says that it's if there's a principle in biology that we see as follows. the, you know, we know that typically speaking there are four different levels. The Rishonim divided up the items in the world into four different levels. You know, you have domain, inanimate objects, you have someach, you have vegetable life, you have chai, animal life, and finally on top of those you have medaber, you have human life. Says the lower something is on the chain, you know, in a sense it's lower, but on the other hand, something that's a rung higher up on the ladder, when it's on, it's higher up on the chain. But when something goes wrong, it actually becomes worse off than something which is lower than it on the chain. So he says, for instance, take a rock and a plant. When the plant is healthy, the plant has more life to it than the rock. Right? The plant grows, it can reproduce, you know, I mean, there's a certain beauty and vitality associated with it, but that's only true as long as the plant is growing. If the plant dies, then it becomes worse off than the rock, the inanimate object. Because, you know, these items which have a certain mila to them, which the thing which is lower on the chain lacks, the minute it loses that mila, it becomes utterly disgusting, you know, in a way in which the lower item, you know, doesn't become loathsome in such a way. Compare a dead plant with a dead animal. Dead plant, okay, you know, you walk by a dead plant, nobody says, ooh, a dead plant. You walk by a dead animal, and, you know, there's the sense of disgust at the way the dead animal decomposes, you know, which you don't quite have with the dead plant. And that says that Nitziv is true all the way up. Cain, who bechomer haruach vehanefesh, shekol ma shatsuris ol shel osa hanefesh b'mayla elyona hachomer cholish, v'mumachzit mayla shalom is kalkel nafshu gamkin. The same is true in Ruchnius. If a person has a mila in Ruchnius that someone else lacks, so then when and if he loses that mila in Ruchnius, he becomes worse than that person who never had that mila in Ruchnius to begin with. So, writes the Nitziv as follows. A Jew, we believe, has something in his neshama that's on a higher madrega than that of a non-Jew. Right? A non-Jew, again, it's something very, very important to remember. You know, non-Jews are human beings. I mean, I'm stating the obvious, but unfortunately there are people out there who don't think it's so obvious, so we have to state the obvious, right? Non-Jews are human beings. They have a tzelem elokim, right? And they are imbued with the Ribbono Shel Olam, with human dignity, and we have to be very cognizant of that human dignity. Jews, above and beyond that basic human dignity that every human being has, have a special neshama that's granted to them by the Ribbono Shel Olam that enables us to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a special way. So that way we have a maila above and beyond, you know, the simple nefesh that every human being has. But that neshama is only considered to be on a maila, on a higher spiritual level, if we do what we're supposed to do. If we don't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu using that extra neshama that we have, that extra element of neshama that we have, we fall and we become worse than the non-Jew who never had that neshama to begin with, that maila to begin with. Right? The same way that the dead animal is more disgusting and repulsive than the dead plant, so too, right? And certainly the dead animal is certainly more repulsive than the live plant. So too, a Jew who has destroyed this element of his neshama that gives him a special connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam is worse off, you know, certainly than the non-Jew who's acting as an ethical and moral person, but even worse off than the non-Jew who's not such an ethical and moral person. In other words, When the Jews are on, they're on. But when they're off, they're really off. That's the idea that the Netziv writes over here. V'kan bozeh ha-mikra, romas lanu ha-mikra, shakusi shenasa toshav, shelo la'avod avodos kochom l'izkavli Yisrael, margil asum l'midos anoshio shel Yisrael li'os chomo merachim v'chadome, shum zeh nasa oshio. In our pasuk, the non-Jew who's coming close to Jewish people and wants to learn from their actions and to become a gomel chasodim and a rachman and all these good things, that's incredible. The Ribbono Shel Olam rewards him by giving him ashirus, by giving him riches. Avogav she'ochel adai nevelos, eno mazik lo l'midas harachman v'achem lo. Ay, he eats treif, and treif, we say, is metamtei mesalev. Treif is only metamtei mesalev for a Jew. Right? It's only for a Jew that we say eating treif somehow has a spiritual impact on him. Why? Because the Jew's neshama is that much more sensitive, is on that kind of special, it has that special quality to it, so that when a Jew imbibes treif, it hurts his neshama. For the non-Jew, it doesn't do anything to him, because he doesn't have that special element of the neshama to begin with. So imeila, it's not as fragile that it's going to be impacted upon by eating the treif. Masha'enken Yisrael, Shemedabik Asmul Zanatoshav, Ve'ochel Nevelos, U'masir Tzuroso Miyos Avodas Hashem Olav. Right? So the Yisrael, the Jew, who attaches himself to this non-Jew, and is eating, and the assumption is that this Jew, who's attaching himself to the non-Jew, is taka eating treif like the non-Jew, right? And is destroying that special element of the Jewish neshama that he has, Hareza Mashkus Levasov Tsuroso Anoshis Gamkin. He's going to fall even lower than the non-Jew. He's going to lose not only that which makes him special as a Jew, he's going to lose his human dignity as well. He's going to lose even that basic aspect of ethics and morals that every human being can possibly have, and the Jew is going to plummet, not just in terms of his Ben Adam Lamakom, he'll plummet in terms of his Ben Adam L'Chavero as well. V'nasa Adam Ra V'achzor, and he'll become a cruel and difficult person. And that will enable him to become impoverished, because again, as we said before, poverty and riches are ultimately a function of the person's Ben Adam L'Chavera. Right? So, an interesting idea which he says in the pasuk itself. But what I think is really quite fascinating over here is a mashal that the Hamik Dover adds in the Harchev Dover. Right, if you take a look in the Harchev Dover, there's an Os Aleph over here. So the Harchev Dover here is printed in two paragraphs. The bottom paragraph, the second paragraph, the Harchev Dover, so the Netziv writes as follows. The Jews and the non-Jews respectively are compared to fire and to water. The Eish Suraso Me'ira Upulaso L'chamim. Fire illuminates, and it also warms up. It can cook something. Umayim lehetech. And water is the opposite. Right? Water cools something down. It douses the illumination. U'vishol shamayim miskarvim le'esh. Fakdeira b'neim. Harei ha'esh po'al ha'amayim harbe l'cham v'esh me'ira kishahaya. Right? When do water and fire work well together? When there's a pot between them. If you fill up a pot with water and put it on the fire, everything works in the best possible way. The fire provides heat and illumination, and the water becomes suitable for cooking, and everything is well with the world, right? Eish and Mayim can be brought together as long as there's a separation between them. And if there's a separation between them, they both function splendidly. By the way, where we see that the Jewish people are compared to Eish, and that the non-Jews are compared to Mayim, so he says a little bit further out of the piece. It's a pasuk on the one hand in Ovadia, V'haya Beis Yaakov Eish, right? That the house of Yaakov will be like an Eish, will be like a fire. And in terms of the non-Jews being compared to water, so the pasuk in Shir HaShirah says, "Mayim rabim lo yuchlu lechados esoava," right? Many waters cannot extinguish the love that the Jewish people have for God. And the Medrash explains that the Mayim Rabbah means the Umas Olam, the nations of the world. So in other words, the identification of the Jews with fire and the non-Jews with water is something that goes back to the Psukim and the Midrash. So, by the way, so again, he says water and fire can function well together as long as there's a separation. And you know, again, this is perhaps pertinent to the other shiur that's going on this evening about marriage and the like. He quotes the following. V'shamati me'arav reb mechil yirmiyo. Da'ayinu de'isa b'rochus daf samachtalel m'beis da'roa k'deir b'chalom yitzapel l'shalom. Very interesting Gemara at the end of Masech de Brochus says that if a person sees a pot, you know, in a kettle, in a dream, so that's a sign of shalom, that's a sign of peace. Why is the pot a sign of peace? Ha'ayin k'mosha ha'k'deir o'se shalom ben eish l'mayim. Because the pot is the one instrument that can enable the fire and the water to get along. Right? You put a fire under the pot, you put water in the pot, the water and the fire coexist. Normally fire and water don't coexist with one another. The pot can make shalom between the two of them. Right? So if you see a pot in a dream, it's a symbol of shalom. Now, sometimes the best way to make shalom between two opposites is to keep them apart from one another. And that's exactly the idea that Nitziv is going to develop with regard to anti-Semitism. If you pour water on fire, Hamayim nischamemu, the water heats up. For eish kafa ve'enol meir oth, but the fire is extinguished. Rak misashen, it just smokes. Mekarach eish hameir u'mechamelon nisher rak mekarach eitzim v'lo yosa. At best, the sticks which were lit, you know, still have a little bit of heat inside of them. Which again, if you rub them together, you can get the fire out of the wood, right? But the fire itself has been extinguished. And eventually the water, which right now is hot, will cool off. And it's not going to be so hot anymore. Right? The only way to light the fire again is to rub the two sticks together. Find your local Boy Scout and get him to rub the sticks together and to get the fire out of the sticks. Kach Yisrael nimshalu le'esh. So too the Jewish people are considered like fire, right? Ve'umos ha'olam nimshalu le'mayim, and the nations of the world are like water. Uvishah she'Yisrael mikuravim la'goyim, when the Jews become close to the nations of the world. Im ha'Torah mavdelas b'neihem, if the Torah is like the pot that separates between them. Yeah, they're close, but not quite on top of one another. Right, not quite mixed up together, not quite assimilated together. Azai Yisrael poalim alumos ha'olam. So then, with the koach of Torah, the Jews have the ability, like the fire, to influence the water, to influence the nations of the world, to cause them to heat up. And yet, v'nisharim b'tzurasam lehoir. And yet, the fire is still extant. The fire can still illuminate. Right, so you know, you get the best of both worlds. The Jews can impact on the non-Jewish world, and we can stay strong in our own beliefs as long as there's the Torah between us. Aval kishein haTorah mavdeles, but when there is no separation of Torah, when you just try to take fire and water and you mix them together, nishpach koach umos haolam al haYehudi. So the water, the nations of the world, just pour themselves out on the Jew. And while it's true, like we said before, that even when you know the Jews and the non-Jews come into contact, the Jews for a brief period of time will have an impact on the nations of the world. After all, if you take the cold water and you spill it directly on the fire, the water will heat up. So too, if there's no Torah between the Jews and the nations of the world and they intermingle together, yes, it's true that the Jews in the short term will have an impact on the nations of the world. They will, you know, learn some of the Gemilus Chasadim and the traits of ethics and morals that Jews represent, but it's going to be short-lived. The same way that the water ultimately is going to cool down, and then the water is just going to go back to the way it was before, and you won't have a fire anymore. The only fire you're going to have left is a little bit of warmth, you know, that's in the sticks, which you're going to have to rub the sticks together in order to be able to reproduce the fire. So too, when the Jews and the non-Jews mingle together without the boundary of Torah, the Jews are going to be extinguished. That light and that power that we have is going to be extinguished. And the impact on the nations of the world will be there, but will be short-lived. So moral of the story is, if you want to have shalom between Eish and Mayim, Right? You have to have that kedera. You have to have that pot which distinguishes between the two of them. That's the Netziv says. That's our pasuk. Yes, the Jew comes close to the non-Jew, and in the process, the non-Jew in our pasuk becomes more of a rachman and a gomel chasodim and all good things. But look at what happens to the Jew in the process. The Jew in that process becomes like the eish which you poured the mayim on, and ultimately is going to be extinguished in the process. Even if he does, in the short run, manage to heat up the water, manages to heat up the non-Jew a little bit.
I was wondering, on a practical level, well, first of all, there's two types of relationships. One is in Galus, and one is in Eretz
Yisrael.
Right. But how close should the Jew and Goy get in practical terms, you know, in the time when the Goy is living between us?
Right.
You know, and how close can we get when we're living between them?
So, yeah, so what's this mean in practical terms? So.
Right.
So we have the Talmud of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. I think Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in one of his English essays, distinguishes between friendship and fellowship. And he writes, you know, clearly to have good social relations with the non-Jews, you know, friendship, as he puts it over there, that's totally permissible and desirable. You know, we're not supposed to... I'm not supposed to look the other way when a non-Jew passes. The Gemara talks about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would always greet everybody first. Afilu nachri shabashuk. So we work together, we interact together on that level. There's this friendship between the two of us. The Gemara talks about how Shmuel had a, you know, had a friendly relationship. He used to drink. The Gemara says with one of the prominent non-Jewish individuals, you know, who was around at that time. You know, so they had a relationship of friendship. That's okay. But fellowship, where we join together in a sense of shared values, so that's the divine, that's where you have to draw the line. So again, you know, figuring out what's friendship and what's fellowship, I mean, that's a whole, you know, that's not always simple. You know, but you do definitely have these two categories here. I mean, I think in light of the Netziv, we might say that the difference between friendship and fellowship is that friendship is where we can relate to one another, but the pot, the Torah, is always going to be there. In other words, the Jew never loses the sense that we're the Am HaTorah, we're different, and these Torah values can never be compromised in any relationship I have with the non-Jew. You know, we want to work together on the co-op board, gesunte heit, you know, that's great, that's wonderful, you know. But fellowship, we want to go out, you know, drinking together and having a great time, so probably what's going to happen in that relationship is that the pot, which distinguishes between the fire and the water, is going to be eroded, right? That we're going to—I'm going to let down my guard and make this person someone with whom I share all of my values with. That's going to be problematic, right? So again, where you draw the line has to be figured out in every specific case. But you know, the difference between friendship and fellowship is whether the Eish and the Mayim are meeting through the medium of the pot, or whether the medium of the pot is not there in that particular case. Okay, wish everybody a good Shabbos. Next week we'll also be meeting on Tuesday night, Be'ez Hashem, because Wednesday night of next week we're having a Yom Yerushalayim program with Chazan, you know, so everyone's invited to partake in that. So we'll meet also next week, Be'ez Hashem, Tuesday night.